New York, Shivan Mahandaraja, historian and author out of London. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight right here at Press TV. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here, we enlighten you with the Ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, recited by Ahmad Mirzad Waqifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa ma takunu fi sha'ni wa ma tatlu وَمَا تَتْلُو مِنْهُ مِنْ قُرْآنٍ وَلَا تَعْمَلُونَ مِنْ عَمَلٍ إِلَّا كُنَّا عَلَيْكُمْ شُهُودًا وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And you are not engaged in any affair, nor do you recite concerning it any portion of the Quran, nor do you do any work, but we are witnesses over you when you enter into it. And there does not lie concealed from your Lord the weight of an atom in the earth, or in the heaven, nor anything less than that, nor greater, but it is in a clear book.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
A senior IRGC commander warns if Israel takes any action against Iranian nuclear sites, the regime will face a more powerful response in kind. Iran rejects Israel's allegation about damaging the Dimona nuclear plant during its recent punitive operation, calling it part of the regime's psychological warfare. And Iran's foreign minister says that Tehran will make Israel regret any new attack on the country after Iran's punitive operation against the regime. Our top story, Iran has warned that in case of Israeli military attack on the country's nuclear facilities, it will give a response in kind to the regime's aggression. Ahmad Haqtalab is commander of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps unit responsible for safeguarding Iran's nuclear sites. He said that Iran has identified all Israeli nuclear sites and powerful Iranian missiles are ready to destroy specified targets at any moment. Haqtalab added Iran may reconsider its nuclear doctrine and policies in case of any Israeli aggression against its nuclear facilities. He said Iran has always had the power to attack the regime's nuclear bases, but has remained committed to international regulations that prohibit such attacks. Haqtalab stressed, as leader of Islamic Revolution has said before, the days of hit and run are over for Israel. He noted in case of an Israeli strike on Iran, the country's response will be powerful and destructive. Spokesperson for Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has rejected Israel's allegation about damage to the Dimona nuclear plant during Iran's recent punitive operation. Brigadier General Ramadan Sharif said claim is part of the regime's psychological warfare. Sharif added the Dimona power plant was not among targets of Iran's operation. He said regime's allegation is nothing but a big lie which is aimed at deceiving public opinion. His remarks came after Israeli media claimed at least one of the missiles hit a building in the Dimona plant during Iran's operation. The regime threatened to give a response to Iran's retaliatory operation, which hit its military bases. Iran's vowed to respond in kind to any Israeli attack on its nuclear sites. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has warned Tehran will make Israel regret any new attack on the country after Iran's punitive operation against the regime.
Iran's legitimate defense and countermeasures have been concluded. Therefore, the Israeli regime, the terrorist Israeli regime, must be compelled to stop any further military adventurism against our interests. Certainly, in case of any use of force by the Israeli regime and of violating our sovereignty, the Islamic Republic of Iran will not hesitate a bit to assert its inherent right to give a decisive and proper response to it to make the regime regret its actions.
Amir Abdullah Young was addressing a UN Security Council meeting on tensions in West Asia. He said Tehran's punitive attack on Israel was minimal and limited operation in accordance with Iran's legitimate right to self-defense. He also slammed Western countries for their efforts to prevent the UN Security Council from condemning Israel's attack on Iran's Damascus embassy. Iran's top diplomat underlined Tehran's prominent role in securing stability in the region, saying that Iran will continue its efforts in this regard. As for the situation in Gaza, Amir Abdullahian called on the UN Security Council to bring Israel and its allies to justice for committing genocide in the besieged Palestinian territory. He said Israel is an occupying regime and passage of time will not give it legitimacy. Now, explosions heard in the Iranian city of Isfahan earlier Friday were due to activation of air defenses in the central city. That's according to a senior army figure in Isfahan. Second Brigadier General Siavash Mihandu says that Iran's air defenses in Isfahan fired at suspicious objects. He said no damage was caused and earlier informed sources said that Iran's air defenses shot down three quadcopters over Isfahan. They said no incident occurred in the country's military or nuclear sites. The International Atomic Energy Agency also confirmed there's been no damage to Iran's nuclear facilities. According to Iran's Civil Aviation Organization, all airports across the country have been brought back to normal functioning after flights were temporarily suspended. Reports of explosions come amid Israel's threat it will respond to Iran's punitive strike launched on the regime's targets over the weekend. Strike was in retaliation for Israel's attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria on April the 1st. Joining us now from Tehran is Tawhid Asadi, academic and political analyst, for more on the story. Hello, Mr. Asadi, pleasure to check in with you. I hope you're safe and doing well. Your thoughts on how quick Western corporate media was to, before the facts came out, jump the gun and spin this the way they've spun it all morning long.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. Well, we know that the Israelis had reportedly warned Biden administration earlier on Thursday that they will have kind of attack or strike on Iran in the next 24 or 48 hours. Whether the events this morning or the response of Israelis have been talking about is too early to say, I think, but at all events, as you said, the situation currently speaking looks quite calm, no sign of explosion or injury, and the recent IAEA report says that there is no damage to Iran's nuclear sites. The official reports also indicate that there is no record of any target being hit, but quite opposite to what we see in the, as a reality on the ground is the media reports by the Israelis and their Western allies in the mainstream Western media that says these mini quadcopters have targeted important places and caused destruction. Well, it comes all from the disastrous climatic situation in which the Israelis are located. They are actually exhausted by failure in war in Gaza over 6 months of, let's say, disastrous failed attempt to defeat Hamas, and IDF is reputationally discredited after not being able to perform well domestically speaking. Israel is experiencing a turmoil, a catastrophic situation, while on the other hand, they did not expect such a retaliatory attack from Iran taking place at this scale. So Iran also said that there is this sort of idea that there is no interest in further escalation, but at the time being, we know that the previous attack was limited in scale, while the next is expected to be further extended. It was part of capacities that was shown to the Israelis, while the next strike, if happens from Iranian side, is going to be by the use of a full spectrum of options, and then it's going to be immediate. And while Iran has got this chance to test the defense capability of Israel, with this experience, I think there is going to be a tough situation for the Israelis. Under such a circumstance, I'm strongly convinced that if wise enough, Israelis are not going to be committing such a mistake, and it might be limited to some statements or some media show, but when it comes to practice, they are pretty much aware of the reality on the ground. They are pretty much aware of the missile capacities that Iran possesses, and added to that is the isolation in which Israelis are located. Do not take a look at the Security Council, in which some representatives from United States or United Kingdom came and supported this apartheid regime. The truth of the matter is that, globally speaking, when you go through the nations, when you go to different countries, you see this isolation against the Israelis, which has put them in a catastrophic situation. After they started this mass murder in Gaza, killing ordinary citizens on a daily basis.
Thank you, Tohid. We're out of time, but thanks for joining us on the bulletin here. Out of Tehran, Tohid Asadi, academic and political analyst. Ongoing Israeli aggressions caused more death and destruction throughout the besieged Gaza Strip, 196 days into the regime's genocidal campaign. Palestinian medical sources say at least three civilians were killed and dozens wounded in Israeli artillery shelling in central Gaza. Into the southern city of Rafah, nearly a dozen Palestinians have lost their lives in Israeli bombing of a residential building. Fatalities include five children and two women from a single family. Also, in northern Gaza, rescue workers have recovered the bodies of 30 people from under rubble of Al-Shifa Hospital. Death toll from Israeli genocide has now risen to nearly 34,000. Thousands of people are still unaccounted for and fear trapped under rubble. Most of the victims of the U.S.-backed onslaught have been women and children. Joining us now from an update from the besieged Gaza Strip is Moti Abu Musabe from the central city of Deir al-Balah. Hello, Moti. Good morning. Hope you're safe out there. What can you tell us?
Yes, good morning, Danny. Actually, the last night was brutal and vehement for the Palestinian civilians across all areas of Gaza Strip, basically Gaza City, whereas the Israeli warplanes continued decimating Gaza City with more relentless airstrikes. In the Ashad refugee camp, a Palestinian residential building was completely destroyed after the Israeli warplanes carried out several airstrikes. At least four Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over the attack, while dozens were injured. In the meantime, Sheikh Ridwan neighborhood also was hit relentlessly after the Israeli occupation forces launched several airstrikes. Another residential building actually was destroyed. At least four Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed as well. In the meantime, when it comes to As-Sabra neighborhood, the headquarter of the Gaza Community College was completely flattened to the ground due to the relentless and the fierce Israeli airstrikes hitting that area. While when it comes to the northern part of Gaza Strip, basically Jabalia refugee camp, the Israeli warplanes continued and resumed their airstrikes against the eastern part of Jabalia refugee camp. Another residential building was destroyed and leveled to the ground as well. In the Tal Zatar neighborhood, which is located in the eastern part of Jabalia refugee camp, we are talking about fierce and relentless Israeli airstrikes that were hitting the Gaza City and the northern part of Gaza Strip, inflicting more destruction in the residential buildings. In the meantime, when it comes to the central area of Gaza Strip here in Deir al-Balah City and Al-Maghazi and Al-Burej refugee camps, they were under heavy bombardments of the Israeli artillery shelling that was maintained against those areas all the night. And even in Rafah City, the Israeli artillery shelling also was maintained as well against the eastern part of the city, while the southern part, including the airport area, was hit relentlessly by several Israeli airstrikes. On the other hand, the Palestinian resistance also continued their their rockets, firing their rockets into the occupied territories, whereas Saraya al-Quds, the armed wing for the Islamic Jihad movement, actually announced launching a barrage of Palestinian rockets and missiles towards the occupied territories, basically Ascalon, from the northern part of Gaza Strip. So after roughly 7 consecutive months of this fighting and these cruel, indiscriminate attacks and these carpet bombings against the northern part of Gaza Strip, the Palestinian resistance is still able to launch and to fire those rockets and missiles into the occupied territories. So this represents another substantial evidence that the Israeli occupation forces have failed to achieve any of their declared objectives and purposes when it comes to eradicate the Palestinian resistance from the Gaza Strip. And even here in the central area of Gaza Strip, Al-Qassam brigades, that they announced that they have succeeded to target another Israeli tank in the eastern parts of Deir el-Balah city. So we are talking about escalation that is still continuous so far. Whether when it comes to the continuous Israeli airstrikes that are still decimating and pounding Gaza Strip, or if it was about the Palestinian resistance actions and the counter-attacks that the Palestinian resistance is able to wage against the Israeli occupation.
And Mosi, before that you go, if you could please touch on the humanitarian situation there, food, clean drinking water, medicine. How much of it is getting into the hands of desperate Gazans? How is it getting distributed, and who's receiving it? Are northern Gazans, central Gazans, southern Gazans getting access to much-needed aid?
Yes, it's crystal clear that the Israeli occupation is still rivaling the delivery of those humanitarian needs and necessities to the people. All these claims of increasing the number of the humanitarian supplies allowed into Gaza Strip are completely untrue, because still this moment the people are still suffering. They are still grappling with these catastrophic humanitarian conditions due to the limited numbers of the humanitarian trucks allowed into Gaza Strip. We are talking about roughly 2.3 million Palestinian civilians are still suffering from these catastrophic humanitarian conditions. And let's be clear that the Israeli occupation forces, basically in these moments, they are still trying to seize the opportunity of being the world completely busy and preoccupied with the spiral escalation between Iran and the Israeli regime, and they are just trying to buy more time in order to increase the suffering and exacerbate the suffering of the Palestinian people. According to Gaza's government media office, the current situation on the ground is still beyond catastrophic. All these amounts allowed to enter into Gaza Strip are still insufficient to alleviate the suffering of the Palestinian people, because as you know that even the people here are demanding continuous and the smooth flow of those humanitarian needs into Gaza Strip, because the need is completely immense and dire. In addition to that, the people actually are demanding to have a real sustainable ceasefire in order to allow those humanitarian supplies to be distributed to the people without any obstacles, without any problems.
All right, Moti, thank you for that update. Stay safe. We'll be checking with you again. Moti Abu Musaba there joining us from the central Gaza city of Deir el-Balah. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
the supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty wise.
The Limelight.
Figures show the number of people travelling by small boat to seek asylum in the United Kingdom has hit a new daily high for 2024 in recent days. As Prime Minister Rishi Sunak braces for a fresh round of parliamentary wrangling over the Rwanda deportation bill. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. It emerged on Monday, 15th of April, that Prime Minister Rishi Sunak will hand over £50 million to Rwanda as soon as his flagship deportation bill is passed into law. On Monday night, MPs voted through plans to forcibly send asylum seekers to East Africa if they arrived in the United Kingdom via small boats. The bill, one of the most controversial pieces of legislation passed in decades, is expected to pass into law at some point in the coming days, after further criticisms and amendments in the House of Lords. It comes after a number of people travelling by small boat to seek asylum in Britain hit a new daily record in 2024 of 534 people on Sunday, 14th of April. According to Whitehall's official auditor, the deal will cost British taxpayers about £1.8 million for each asylum seeker, although no one has so far been deported. Appearing before the Public Accounts Committee, Matthew Rycroft, the Home Office's permanent secretary, said ministers would hand over the payment to the Rwandan government as soon as we have royal assent. The Safety of Rwanda Bill, which seeks to limit legal challenges by asylum seekers selected for deportation, was brought forward after Rwanda was ruled to be unsafe for asylum seekers by the Supreme Court. The Safety of Rwanda Bill, which seeks to limit legal challenges by asylum seekers selected for deportation, was brought forward after Rwanda was ruled to be unsafe for asylum seekers by the Supreme Court. Conservatives argued that the law will lead to a drop in the number of people travelling across the channel in small boats to seek asylum in Britain. They argued this will provide Prime Minister Rishi Sunak with a boost in an election year. In the House of Commons, Stephen Kinnock said the Rwanda plan was doomed to fail. The Shadow Home Office Minister said, "The boats have kept coming, the backlog has kept growing, and the people smugglers are still laughing all the way to the bank." He said, 2 years of headline-chasing gimmicks, 2 years of pursuing a policy that is fundamentally unworkable, unaffordable and unlawful, 2 years of flogging this dead horse." He added, "I'm an inveterate optimist, so I truly believe that one day the benches opposite will come to understand that hard graft and common sense are always more effective than the sugar rush of a tabloid front page." Conservative MP Sir William Cash said, "The House of Lords needs to calm down a bit in its reviewing of the Rwanda Bill. The real question now is, let's get this bill done, let's get the House of Lords to calm down a bit, and let us also at the same time wait for what is inevitably going to be another claim, and then see what the judgment of the Supreme Court is on the wording, providing it is clear and unambiguous, of this bill." Sir William Cash added, "That is all I need to say. I may come back again, however, if there is another insistence by the House of Lords on these ridiculous amendments." Government insiders remain confident the bill will pass in the coming days after another round of parliamentary ping-pong between the House of Commons and the House of Lords. The Labour Party has indicated it will not block the bill, with local elections looming and the government hoping for a confrontation over the scheme. However, a group of Labour and crossbench peers are expected to send the bill back to the House of Commons again. The ISU union, which represents frontline border force and immigration workers, said its members were concerned about potential physical resistance from people being taken into detention for Rwanda flights and on the plane itself. ISU professional officer Lucy Morton said, "Given the undertaking that we will not send anyone with a criminal record to Rwanda, and given the high stakes involved, there is serious concern that migrants may take to assaulting staff as a way to avoid removal." A senior official from the Public and Commercial Services Union, which represents Home Office staff, said industrial action would be on the table if the government ignores future injunctions by the European Court of Human Rights and instructs civil servants to breach them, a move it believes would violate the Civil Service Code. The charity Care for Calais, which helped block flights to Rwanda last year, said it had recruited volunteers to identify people who were due to be removed to the Central African nation. It intends to offer legal support to asylum seekers to try to keep them in the United Kingdom. Meanwhile, The Times reported on Monday, 15th of April, that Britain had also approached countries including Costa Rica, Armenia, the Ivory Coast, and Botswana in an effort to replicate the scheme. Sources said the claims were accurate, but referred to talks that took place last year. Ryecroft confirmed that the government had drawn up a list of possible countries, but said that a tiny number had proved to be suitable for UK's scheme. Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Figures show the number of people travelling by small boat to seek asylum in the United Kingdom hit a new daily high for 2024 in recent days, as Prime Minister Rishi Sunak braces for a fresh round of parliamentary wrangling over the Rwanda deportation bill. Unions and charities are preparing to mount legal challenges to the bill, which is meant to stop the boats passes into law in the coming days. Official Home Office data shows 534 people were detected making the channel crossing by small boats on Sunday, 14th of April, after 214 travelled on Saturday, 13th of April. It means about 6,000 people have made the journey so far this year, with more than 75,000 arrivals recorded 2 years on from the Rwanda deal being signed. The Safety of Rwanda Asylum and Immigration Bill will be back in the House of Commons as the government seeks to overturn changes made to it in the House of Lords. It is expected to be sent back to the Lords on Wednesday and could then be returned to the House of Commons again. Ministers will seek to strip out changes made by peers who want extra legal safeguards, including a provision to ensure due regard for domestic and international law. Victoria Atkins, the Health Secretary, suggested recently the Home Office could be ready to go in implementing the plan once the bill entered the statute books. The legislation seeks to revive the government's plan to send some asylum seekers on one-way flights to Kigali in Rwanda. The scheme has faced a series of setbacks since it was announced 2 years ago by the then Prime Minister Boris Johnson. It declares the East African country safe after the policy was grounded by the Supreme Court ruling that it was unlawful. The Labour peer, Shami Chakrabarti, told BBC Radio 4's Today programme her amendment restores the jurisdiction of domestic courts who are defenestrated by this bill, and detailed other amendments including exemptions for victims of modern slavery and human trafficking, and for people who put themselves in harm's way overseas serving the British Crown.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Midstream.
In the name of Allah, the Most Gracious, the Most Merciful. Indeed, we shall avenge the criminals. This is how the leadership of the Iranian Revolution Guard Corps began its official statement on April 14, announcing the beginning of the True Promise operation carried out by the Airspace Force with support from other forces. Operation True Promise consisted of a broad military operation against targets inside occupied Palestinian territories with missiles and drones in response to the numerous crimes of the Zionist regime, including the attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus and the martyrdom of Iranian military commanders and advisors. Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces Major General Mohammad Bagheri detailed the retaliatory attack against targets in the occupied territories, saying that the Israeli regime failed to intercept Iran's projectiles.
The strikes were designed to target a massive intelligence center in Jabal al-Sheikh on the border with Syria. The center relayed information that was used to attack the consular section of the Iranian embassy in the Syrian capital of Damascus. Among the targets was also Israel's Nevatim airbase, from which the regime used its F-35 fighters in the crime committed against Iran's embassy.
Chief Commander of the IRGC, Hossein Salami, gave his assessment of Iran's operation, True Promise, saying if the Zionist regime targets any of our personnel, properties, and civilians, we will not hesitate to retaliate from our land.
The operation could have been executed in much larger scales, but we decided to just focus on the Israeli targets that are used directly against us and our allies in the region. Based on our latest verified reports, the outcome was better than what was expected. I advise the Zionist regime to learn from its mistakes and stop repeating them. The operation helped us gain a lot of information about their defensive measures, and if they retaliate, our next response will be much larger.
Whoever followed the events from their beginning and read the current True Promise developments on the military, political, economic, and social levels reached an inevitable conclusion: the demise of the Zionist entity first, and the disintegration of the global system of evil second. On April 14, there were no gray areas. As direct players, you were either rubbing the nose of Zionists from all capitals of the resistance axis, or you were an abhorrent entity protecting the cancerous, vile Zionist regime who had been involved in incremental genocide since October 7, 2023. And as spectators, you either supported the resistance celebrating the strike on Zionist Israel for Gaza first and foremost, or you were an appeaser and agent rushing to downplay the event, mock it, or call it a theatrical performance. You are either a free human or a tormented, shackled soul that will never taste dignity, glory, and the certainty of victory. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps launched Operation True Promise in response to Zionist Israeli aggressions targeting occupied Palestinian territories with missiles and drones. The operation signifies a resolute stance against the Zionist regime and the broader global system of evil, with supporters celebrating resistance against the Israeli occupation while detractors downplay its significance. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Ibrahim Mousawi, Hezbollah Member of Parliament and Professor of Media Theories and Studies at the Lebanese University. Thanks a million for being with us, Professor Mousawi. Now, many regional normalizers with the Zionist Israeli entity, especially those whose countries actually played a defensive role against the Iranian missiles, which they attempted to intercept while on their way to target Zionist Israel. Many of them downplayed the Iranian response, the True Promise operation, claiming it is just a theatrical performance. On what grounds are these people supporting these claims?
Well, thank you for giving the opportunity. It's a must to say that this is a glorified day. This is a glorious day for all of us, for all of the doomed, oppressed people, for the Palestinians, for the Arabs, for the Muslims, for all who believe in freedom and liberation and independence and in dignity. Indeed, we have to say this as an introduction to what we're going to say. Those who are downplaying or downsizing the achievement, the significant achievement, and I insist the significant achievement by the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Revolutionary Guard against the Israeli existence, against the Israeli entity, they are either one of two cases. They are collaborators with the enemy at one side, or they are people who have this very, if you want to say, complex of inferiority against the West and against Israel. Those who are downsizing this, they have a job. It's either a paid job or they are trying to waive the excuse, try to tell their excuses because they have always been inferior to what's coming from the West.
Mm-hmm.
One, the Islamic Republic of Iran, one Hezbollah, one the Revolutionary Guard, one Hamas, one all of the resistance factions, Islamic Jihad, others, when they take the initiative and fight back after 75 years in order to liberate Palestine, this tells a very important narrative for all of the generations to come, that we are in the position to resist, we are in the position to defeat the Israelis, and we are in the position to defend, and not only to defend, but also to launch. Now, Israel is vulnerable. Israel has no kind of shield. Israel has the Western support, and it has never been tested before. It has never been witnessed.
This is where the upcoming...
It has never been witnessed before that Israel is so open and vulnerable. And very
which, by the way, Dr. Moussaoui, it might put Israel in a position where it can go all ballistic on everyone. This is my question for you, because after what comes after this Iranian retaliation is either just a slap in the face of the Zionist entity, which they take, they swallow, and they sit, or they go ahead and do an uncalculated, if I may, attack against Iranian soil, which would no doubt ignite the entire world, not only the region of West Asia, but the entire world.
Actually,
I'm interested in this second option. How do you see the possibility of that option, especially this week?
Not very likely, actually. It might happen. I don't want to say this cannot happen. I cannot negate or say it's negative 100% that Israel wouldn't do it. But I tell you one simple thing. Now, the United States... Washington has taken the initiative. Washington has the upper hand. Washington has told Israel not to attack back against Iran. Why? Because Washington loves the human rights, because Washington respects the peoples and governments and the sovereignty of states? Of course not. It's because they have made their own calculations and they know what kind of consequences and repercussions might happen. First, this is a very sensitive juncture of time because Biden is on the running for the elections. Second, the United States and the West haven't recovered from the continuous and permanent defeat that is taking place in the Ukrainian war against Russia. Third, they don't want to have any destabilization in the regional order now, especially that Iran has the upper hand. They have to understand they are colonial powers. They came here thousands of miles away in order to exploit our fortunes, in order to colonize our people, in order to make the theft of our oil and of our land and of so different resources in the region. We are the people. We are the indigenous people. We are the owners of the land. We are the owners of the history. We are on the right side of history. And that's why United States don't want to go into this kind of war. If they made if they made this kind of miscalculation, if Netanyahu did it, then we are going to witness unleashing powers. And Iran has made it very clearly, if they do it, they are going to retaliate 10 times than they did now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that Israel is ready for that. I believe most likely they are going to swallow it. And if not, they want to do any symbolic things just to say that they have done mm-hmm. something back and they didn't swallow it completely.
And it's something that is unprecedented on all levels, not with the Iranian retaliation alone, because during the early hours of Sunday, April 14, Professor, as spectators, we all saw that the entire axis of resistance was actually involved in that retaliation in one way or another, but we were not really able to follow everything that was happening because it was immense and in very short period of time. Can you clarify what was the role of each of those Operation True Promise actors briefly, please?
Well, actually, my understanding is that they were all on high alert, but none of them has interfered, actually. There is a continuous engagement. For example, take South Lebanon, for example. There mm-hmm. is a continuous engagement, and it continued. It didn't stop. But the very important thing is that the people of Gaza, who have been under since like almost 200 days under this continuous barrage of Israeli attacks and the continuous and permanent presence of the drones and the war jets in their air, they were happy because they have taken a kind of a holiday vacation.
It was calm for the first time in six months, wasn't it?
Exactly. This is one thing. The other thing is that the importance of this attack by the Revolutionary Guard in Iran is that it has been done solely by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard. None of the other parties, none of the other sides of the sector has, or the Axis has interfered. Not in Yemen, not in Lebanon, not in... This is very telling. Iran wanted to tell the whole world that it's going to defend its soil by its brave soldiers, by its brave Revolutionary Guard members, by the will and the determination of Iran. This is one thing. But all of those on the Axis, all of the ribs of the Axis, they were ready and they were on high alert to interfere at any time because they are fighting as an Axis and they continue to fight as an Axis.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will continue talking about this in the second half of the show. Now, please stay tuned because next we are going to talk about how this unprecedented slap to the Zionist face will change the face of the region.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Iran's recent unprecedented military operation on Zionist Israel is no doubt a pivotal moment in Middle Eastern geopolitics. It emphasizes the strategic significance of the attack, showcasing Iran's military capabilities and its determination to reshape regional power dynamics. Overall, the attack signifies a turning point in the West Asian hemisphere with far-reaching implications for global perceptions, bolstering Iran's influence among anti-imperialist nations and reinforcing its commitment to the Palestinian cause. More details in the following report.
In recent days, West Asia has been shaken by Iran's bold military retaliatory strike against Zionist Israel, marking a significant turning point in the region's geopolitical landscape. This operation, dubbed the True Promise, was a response to Zionist Israel's aggression on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus and the martyrdom of Iranian military commanders and advisors. However, this operation has far-reaching implications that extend beyond mere military confrontation. Let's delve deeper into the key points that underscore the significance of this event. Starting with the Zionist-Israeli attempt to downplay the importance of the attack underscores its significance. Contrary to Zionist Israel's narrative, the strike holds immense military and strategic value, showcasing Iran's capabilities and resolve to defend its own interests and its allies in the region. Iran's operation has also ushered in a new era, challenging the traditional power dynamics in West Asia. By successfully executing this retaliatory attack, Iran has established a new equation, signaling to regional actors that it possesses the means and determination to reshape the balance of power. Iran's operation has also bolstered Iran's position in the eyes of anti-imperialist nations and individuals worldwide. Through its decisive response, Iran has demonstrated its commitment to defending oppressed populations and challenging imperialist aggression, thereby garnering support and admiration from like-minded entities, all evident by the exploding social media posts from all across the world as the operation was underway. Iran's strike now serves as a powerful assertion of its unwavering support for the Palestinian cause. By directly targeting the Israeli occupation with a projectile of advanced ballistic and hypersonic missiles, Iran has reaffirmed its commitment to standing alongside the Palestinian people in their struggle for justice and liberation. All of the above could not have been possible had it not been for the Islamic Revolution leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei's decisive leadership in authorizing the retaliatory attack, which has garnered widespread acclaim, both domestically and internationally. His unwavering commitment to defending Iran's interests and confronting aggression has solidified his position as a revered figure in the region and beyond. It is safe to say today that Zionist Israel's decades-long boast of invincibility has been shattered in the wake of Iran's attack. The Zionist regime's inability to prevent or adequately respond to the strike has exposed its vulnerabilities, leading to a decline in its perceived strength and credibility on the global stage. As the dust settles, the ramifications of this historic event will continue to reverberate across the geopolitical landscape, shaping the dynamics of the region for years to come.
Now we are back with Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, Hezbollah Member of Parliament and Professor of Media Theories and Studies at the Lebanese University. Dr. Ibrahim, thanks again. Now, how does Iran's recent operation, True Promise, on Zionist Israel challenge traditional power dynamics in the region of West Asia? And what are the implications of regional stability that the United States of America have been repeating for the past 3 days?
After the 14th of April, now, as we say, there is the 7th of October before and after, we say the 14th of April before and after. Mm-hmm. Now we have a new Iran. Now we have a rejuvenating of the new face of Iran. Iran has ushered in a completely new geopolitical strategic era, not only in the region but in the whole world, because it's telling the whole world that all of your support that you have been funneling to the Israelis through 75 years, they meant nothing. The people in the region wouldn't accept its existence, and they are ready to hit back if the Israelis, if the Americans are continuing their aggressions in the region. This is one thing. The other thing, the geostrategic features and the geostrategic consequences of this attack will unfold on the political level, on the economic level, on the military level, on the strategic level, and we are going to witness little by little how the dynamics, the whole dynamics in the region are going to change. As you can see, there is a kind of dynamism that is accelerating in a very hasty speed in the region, and I believe this is going to continue. Always it will boil down to the interest of the people of the region, to the Islamic Republic, and to the axis of the resistance. This is something that we will all witness little by little, how the influence of Israel will diminish little by little, how the influence of the Israeli, of the American hegemony will diminish little by little, and how the people of the region themselves, the indigenous people, will take the initiative and will continue to achieve more and more steps towards sovereignty, independence, and liberation.
Well, Dr. Moussaoui, Iran definitely, the retaliatory attack against Zionist Israel, it reinforces its position amongst the anti-imperialist nations in the world, and it also definitely reassures the commitment of the Islamic Republic of Iran towards the Palestinian cause as a primary cause for Muslims around the world. But how might, do you think, that influence the regional alliances and the regional conflicts as well? I mean, Iran does have alliances in the region, but it does also have foes. How is that going to affect this relationship?
I believe it's all going to boil down to the Iranian interest. How? See what happened in the United States. Take the United States as one of the most influential superpowers in the world, like it or not, but this is a reality. Mm-hmm. Now, this is we're again under unipolar, but we have many other forces, regional forces coming out. The United States itself, that made very good calculations, they themselves don't want to go into a war with Iran. They want to have a regional stability. They know very well that any war against Iran, it's not going to boil down to their interest, and it's going to boost more and more the Iranian position in the region and in the West Asia position. That's why I believe, little by little, they are going to realize that more of those who are going to make their own realistic calculations about what's happening, they are going to be more convinced to have good relations with Iran, and this is going to put Iran in a better position, will foster its achievements in the region, and it will make it a very important, pivotal, crucial force that many will come in order to have good relation with. One of the things that I want to talk about, the Iranian industry on the military level. Those who have always relied on America and on the American shield in order to protect themselves, they will know that Iran has been able to make a complete crash for this kind of propaganda that the American weapons are invincible and they can do their job. Iran, with its own capabilities, with the genius people who have made the industry and the inventions and the creativity solutions for many problems, have been able to go and to attack one of the highly militarized areas in the region. It's the Israeli entity with the support of America and the West. Now, this is something very important on the geopolitical level. Take Saudi Arabia, for example, that have taken a position of rapprochement with Iran. This is going to make Saudi Arabia more convinced about its decisions, about its choices. And this will push others who are going to make their realistic calculations that it's our interest to come and make a kind of relation, or at least not to go into a kind of a clash with Iran, at least to make into a kind of relation to pacify the region. I believe we are going to yield a lot of results. Iran is going to yield a lot of results. The axis of resistance is going to yield a lot of positive results on the coming future.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Moussaoui, a lot of people who are truly ignorant, they don't know what Iran is and how Iran came to be the way that it is. They have no idea that the leadership of the leader of the revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and before him the success of the revolution at the hands of Imam Ruhollah Khomeini as well, were the main pillar that brought Iran to where it is right now as not only a regional but an international power. That has definitely shattered the credibility and the position of Zionist Israel across the world because of this leader that was adamant on showing the world that despite the sanctions, despite the animosity, Iran will continue and persist to stand by the Palestinian people and all the peoples in the region who are oppressed by imperialism and colonialism. How do you explain this leadership to the Western audience, and how did it really help in getting Iran here?
Well, since the inception of the Islamic, since the advent of the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic Republic of Iran, everybody thought that Iran is going to rely, for example, on the Soviet Union at the time, because we witnessed the collapse of Soviet Union later in the early 90s, 1989. And the advent of America as the unipolar. Of course, there was this antagonistic, this animosity, this kind of severing of relation between America and the Islamic Republic of Iran after the revolution. Iran has put it very clearly. It's not going to rely on the East. It's not going to rely on the West. It's an Islamic Republic. And they started to depend on themselves. And all, just imagine this. I mean, this is incredible. It's all like a miracle within a miracle within a miracle. Iran, that has always been under siege, under the war, Saddam war, the imposed war for 8 years, the sanctions, the siege of against Iran, not allowing Iran to take any technology, not allowing Iran to sell its oil, not all of these that happened, the total siege against Iran, continuous conspiracies, attempt on the lives of the scientists, the nuclear scientists, and many of them were martyred, many of the leaders. Yet Iran comes to the world with these significant achievements. Iran, from the very beginning, with the resolve and the determination and this relying on Allah, the omnipotent, the omnipresence, this is the miracle of faith. This is the rejuvenating and the revivalism of Islamism and of the religion, the role of religion in the life of the people, that is ready to give all possible alternative against any challenges. Mm-hmm. This is the important thing that Iran has done under Imam Khomeini, under Imam Khamenei, and with this leadership, and with also the congregation and the support of the people towards this leadership. Mm-hmm. Iran, by itself, and with all of the siege, and with all of the isolation, and with all of the sanctions, has been able to make all of these achievements. Israel, with all of the support, with all of the supply, with all of the Western power coming, bringing arms to it, has not been able to defend itself. Mm-hmm. Just make this comparison, and it will tell you a lot about something that the ordinary people, not only the ordinary people, all those who believe in the theories of liberalism and mm-hmm. whatever, they should understand that we The Muslims believe that Allah is always there. Mm-hmm. Allah is the omnipotent. Allah is the omnipresent.
It's the power of faith.
And it's the power of faith.
And faith and brings this, along
and this
miracles.
Surrender to Allah's will and determination that His will prevail, mm-hmm. and the will of the believers of Allah will prevail, and all of those, the arrogance, the world arrogance, the colonizers, all of them will fail, inshallah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, Hezbollah MP and Professor of Media Theories and Studies at the Lebanese University, thanks a million for being with us to discuss this unprecedented victory in the region, especially at the hands of the believers who we were talking about just right now. Thanks a million for being with us. Hopefully, us, along with you, we will be able to see the liberated Al-Aqsa and the liberated oppressed people of Gaza as well, regaining their liberty and their dignity, inshallah, Azza wa Jal. Thanks a million for being with us. We promise to always give you the latest updates from right here, West Asia, on the Middle East Stream.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in His image, then placed the world in His care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint. A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program, in which we try to criticize movies with religious and spiritual themes on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speaker, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid Abdullah, and welcome to the program.